Hello, everybody. This is Patricia Corey, and you're listening to Beyond the Matrix, the program. Now, listen to these words that are my subline that asks you to think outside the box of convention and soar with the eagles in the free thought zone. And man, I mean, almost literally today, we'll be doing just that because I have the great, I came across this wonderful story about Jeff Guidry and An Eagle Named Freedom, which is the name of his book. It's a best-selling book by HarperCollins some time ago, and I contacted him, and it took a while for him to get back to me, and he has. I just was so moved by this beautiful story. You all know I'm an animal activist, and we hear too many really depressing things about man's inhumanity to man, of course, not to mention the animal kingdom. And then there are people like Jeff who have these extraordinary experiences with animals, and yet he has this sweet humility about him, which is something that I really look for. I mean, I had an option: interview him or interview somebody who's calling himself the Grand Master of Chi. And needless to say, I gravitate to him. So I want to just tell you all that I hope you've turned up your radio. Invite your friends, because I think this is going to be a very moving hour that we're going to share with Jeff. And who knows, maybe an eagle named Freedom is sitting on his shoulder. Thank you, Jeff Guidry, for coming on my show.
Well, thank you, Patricia, for having me. It's an honor.
It's an honor is all mine. Where are you? Are you in Alaska? Is that where you are?
No, I'm actually in Washington State right now, and I don't have an eagle on my shoulder, but I have a cat in my lap.
Oh, that'll do. I have a dog in my lap, so.
Well, I have a dog at my feet. We're
Well,
all
you know,
upstairs.
I just can't wait to dive into the story, and no doubt you've had to tell it over and over again, and I hope that it won't be difficult for you to go through the whole thing from start to finish, because I'm sure many of my readers have not, well, perhaps a lot of my readers have not heard your story. So basically, from the beginning, your rescue of this beautiful animal, your connection to the Sarvie Wildlife Center. Let's you take it. Tell me where you want to start.
Well, I guess the best place to start is just at the beginning. As I say,
Yeah,
we're in
that'll be
Washington. We're in Washington State. So actually, I am headed to Alaska next week, but that's a whole other story. But back in I think it was 1998. Actually, I was a volunteer at Sarvie Wildlife Care Center, and we're in Arlington, Washington, and we had this ambulance driver named Crazy Bob, and he was a very eccentric, and I say old guy, late 50s, made a lot of money in oil, but he devoted all of his time to wildlife. I mean, he ran an ambulance 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. And anyway, Bob Jones, he wound up bringing this eagle in that somebody had called us on. It was at the found at the base of the nest tree, and it was about a 3-month-old fledgling, and this bird had both wings were broken, and her left wing was broken in four different places.
Oh,
Part of
man.
the problem with wing breaks in eagles is those bones in there are pneumatic bones, which means they're hollow and air flows through them. So
Wow.
to heal, to get something like that to heal from the stress, it's really hard anyway. But when you have a wing in four places like that, it's right away that really that bird's not going to fly again. So at that point, we were just trying to save her life, and hopefully, by some miracle, she could fly again. So she arrived that day, and I happened to be there. And Kay Baxter, who founded Sarvie Wildlife, and she's since passed on, she asked me. She goes, "Well, would you take this bird to the vet?" And I said, "Sure." So we had this old car I used to drive up there, and I had to take out the passenger seat to get the half a carrier in there with this big bird, When eagles are young, they look bigger than adults because their feathers are quite a bit larger. So
Wow.
I had this busted up bird, and I'm driving down. It's about a half hour drive, and this bird kept staring at me, and I talked to it, and I got it in there and held it for X-rays, and they did all the stuff and pinned the wings, which is like a little bit of surgery. They put these it's a tube that goes through the wing, and they put these pins through it, so hopefully it'll steady it and it'll grow back and heal correctly. So I got her back up to the wildlife center, and she's in what's called a dowel cage, and it's a big wooden cage, and it has dowels for bars so it doesn't injure the feathers. And inside mm-hmm. that, we put her in a great big dog carrier with the top off. And so laying in there on a bunch of shredded newspaper and stuff, that's so they don't get sores on their keel. She was just laying in there, and we tubed fed her and, monitor and stuff like that, make sure she's hydrated. And after a while, she could start eating on her own, but she wouldn't stand up. And she was at the age, obviously she should have been standing because we think she was trying to fly. You know, they do the elevation on the nest, and she kind of just went over. She did have a sibling in the nest that did fledge. But when Freedom came in, she was just, totally emaciated and covered in lice. So she was going to be in a bad way anyway. You get rid of the lice, and as the weeks went by, I would go in there, and I was kind of drawn to this bird. And I'd been there a couple of years, so I knew enough in wildlife rehab. You know, you try not to get emotionally attached to any of these animals coming through there. Even though everybody's there for the, because they're passionate about wildlife. But, the ideal situation when they come in is to heal them up and put them back in the wild.
Right.
And then the other option is, either they get euthanized or they get placed in some kind of program. And even if they're placed, the inherent paradox is they're a wild animal and they should be free. What are they giving up to be in captivity where they can't go free, which is always a thing. So, I'm trying to get her to stand up over the next few weeks. I would go in there and I'd just lift her up and put her on her feet and hold her and see if she'd stand. And she'd just always collapse down. And I'd sit there and talk to her, and basically tell her, I go, listen, if you want to live, you got to stand up. We need to know that you want to live. And I was taught early on there by my friend Judy Buchek, talk to them because they understand. And, Kay told me that too. When we have birds of prey and we use for educational programs, we never train them like falconers do. We never train with food. We don't use hoods. We ask them, hey, will you do this?
Wonderful.
And they do. Yeah, so ours is definitely a different way of doing things. And, and Kay ingrained that early on in us. So, and as it went on, 6 weeks go by, 7 weeks go by, and she's not standing. Well, we had this little conference like at the end of 7 weeks, and I'm there, and Kay and Judy and a couple other clinic directors there. And we go, if this bird is not going to stand by the end of next week, we're probably going to have to put her down because this really isn't any way for an eagle to go out. If she can't stand, this is just torture, And a friend of mine once told me there's a fine line between torture and rehab, And that line moves depending on where you're at with whichever animal you're at. So you have to be very aware of that, and you don't want to cross it. But you don't want to, go too early either. So we gave it another week, and I check on her every day, and she's still not standing. So the day before she's due to be put down, like about 24 hours, I go, I didn't really want to go up there because at that point I was attached to this bird, and I didn't want to have to say goodbye. So I thought about not going. I go, no, you've been there this whole time. You at least owe it to this bird to go up and see how she's doing. And if she got to say goodbye, then you say goodbye. So I drove up there. It was a long drive. I was kind of depressed, And I get up there, and I walk in the clinic, and everybody, four or five people, they just kind of look at me and smile and don't say anything. And I have to walk through the kitchen and around the corner to where she is in this back room. And as I turn the corner, I can see the dowel cage, and she's standing up in the corner, and she's craning her neck over because she hears me coming. So she's looking around the corner, And it's still emotional to this day, even talking about that particular moment.
It's been very emotional for me as well, because I can only imagine when you said I was depressed to have to go back and put her down. Anyone who works with animals know how the pain that brings. And like you said, there's a point where you have to set yourself, your own emotion aside and do what's best for the animal, but how exciting to get there and see her standing. Wow.
Yeah, it was it's one of the highlights of my life, there's been a few, but that one was just completely surprising, and it really, made my day. And so it was nice to see her respond to that. And I just kind of sat there with her, and everybody around there is in tears and stuff. This bird's standing, and she made it. And so after she's rehabbing like that for a little bit, Kay goes, well, you know, we've never had a, well, let me back up. So at this point in time, we have, the pins are coming out because the wing, you know, the wing needs to, they had been out and the wing needs to heal. So we're trying to move it around and I'm getting her out and I'm trying to move her left wing around, the one that was broken so badly. But it's frozen and, you know, it only opens halfway. What most people think are the elbow, the big top part of the wing, is actually the wrist. And that part is frozen because the brake was real close to it. And so her wing only opens halfway. And no matter how much I tried moving it around, and others, when I wasn't there, we tried to give her physical therapy for it. It was just so badly damaged, there was no way it was ever going to open. And so once we figured out that this bird, well, once we had, you know, positive, you know, affirmation that this bird was not going to be able to go anywhere, she was declared non-releasable due to injury. And then Kay came up to me because I developed a bond with this bird. And she goes, well, you know, we could put her in the education program. Why don't you glove train her? I'm going, well, that's a great idea. What do I do? So the way I glove train Freedom and the way she learned is totally different from the way people glove train birds. I would just stick the glove in the cage, you know, and she would step on it and she'd look at it, you know, and I go, here, I point my finger over here. And then pretty soon I put it on my arm and she'd look at it and she'd put one foot on and then take it off. And we'd go back and forth like that. And yeah, people have asked me over the years, were you ever afraid of this bird? Because, you know, I mean, they're really big, you know, and they've got, you know, a beak designed for ripping meat and very powerful talons. And I go, you know, never once have I had any fear with this bird. There's been this communication between her and I from early on. And, it, you know, the fear never even crossed my mind.
Well, some of the pictures that I've seen are so utterly remarkable that they make me cry when I look at them. And one of them is, of course, the one with her head nestled in your neck. It is just, it's so otherworldly. It's really remarkable. And I can't imagine that you would, in fact, would have ever had anything but connection and joy with this beautiful being.
Absolutely. There's a lot of love on both ends of it, you know, and it's such an honor and a privilege to have a connection with a being like this, you know. And before I get back to the actual story, I've met other rehabbers and stuff over the years, and a lot of them, well, I shouldn't say a lot, but many of them feel that these birds don't have emotions and they're totally food-driven, you know. And, and I have told so many people, I go, if you just watch, just sit there and watch, they will communicate with you and they will tell you. And you're crazy if you think that's the case. I mean, you're just blind to what's going on around you.
Yeah, it's kind of bothersome that these are the same people that are training, working with these animals. Because for years, I've been battling out the conversation of animals don't have souls with the people that are still so soulless to be able to make that statement.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. You're just totally blind and you're not accepting the truth that's right in front of you.
Yeah,
they're, I mean, they're amazing souls. You just have to listen and watch, and they'll tell you so many things, and you can learn so much. But as we started this glove training, back and forth, hopping on the glove, and then I'd slowly pull her out of the dowel cage, and then she'd hop back in, and then we'd start going and walking around the room. And I had a few others that would help along the way. So I'd show them what to do, and they would just get her on the glove, not really walk her around, but just every day or so somebody would get her on the glove and she would come back. But and then I was the one who took her around, and then I got her used to getting anklets on and jesses, which are the, like, a leather leash that comes down from the anklets and then it clips to another leash, and that gives you control. It's so they don't hurt themselves, you don't get hurt, and anybody around you doesn't get hurt, because, you know, they'll get excited and jump off, and you don't want the animal to go hurt itself, so it's or get hurt, I should say. So we got that going, and I had watched everybody who handled birds, and they all used the left hand. And, you know, I wanted to use the right hand. That was felt more natural to me. But I went ahead and used the left hand on a program, because I would go on both hands depending on where she was during the training. And so our very first program, I get her on the left hand, and she spins around totally backwards. She's facing the wrong way. I can't get her to turn around the way I want. And I'm thinking, well, I mean, she's on the glove, so that's a good thing, but it's not really what I was looking for. So, and I had brought both gloves with me that day. And so there was a photo shoot later on, or a photo op for this group here. And I go, let me try something. And so I put her on the right-handed glove, and she was absolutely perfect. I mean, she's nestled right up there, you know, and she was good. And then it dawned on me. It was just like this light went off. I go, oh, animals in the wild try to hide their injuries. Her bad injury was her left wing, so that's why she puts it towards me.
You know?
And it makes total sense. And so she's been on the right hand ever since. So, you know, we're doing everything backwards. I trained her completely outside the norm of the book. Nobody ever does that. She's on the right hand. And then to find out later on, the Mongolian eagle hunters for years, and they use golden eagles to hunt rabbits and stuff like that, they all use the right hand. That's like an ancient tradition, you know, and they ride on their horses with the staff with the golden eagles on their arm. So, so we go off and we're doing our programs, and, you know, she's still a very young bird. She's pitch black. I mean, the beak of a first-year bird is just like this dark blue ebony. It's like you can almost see into it forever. It's just one of the most beautiful things you'll ever see. And she starts getting lighter, and a couple years into this, in the spring of 2000, I found a lump in my neck. I hadn't shaved for a few days, and it was kind of scratching, and I go, and it was, you know, down under my jaw, and it's going, I wonder what that is. So I just, in typical fashion, I just ignored it, figuring it would go away. You know, and, you know, 3 or 4 weeks later, it's still there, and my wife goes, well, you know, you need to get that looked at. And I was up at the Wildlife Center, and my friend Judy, who's a retired pathologist, she saw it, and her eyes got the size of, like, saucers, you know. And anyway, I went and had all kinds of tests done. They did a biopsy. Then they did surgery and cut it out. And I was diagnosed with non-Hodgkin's lymphoma. And I had stage 3, which basically means it was everywhere and in one major organ.
Wow.
So I had to go through chemo. And, you know, when I got the diagnosis, I was pretty pissed off about it. I came home, I go, I don't have time for cancer, and I don't have time to do all this. I have way too many things going on, so it really put a kink in all my plans.
To say so, the least.
it was. Linda will tell you that to this day, because you came in and you were so mad. You go, I don't have time for this.
But that's part of what healed you is that attitude.
You know, my doctor, my GP, for years after that, she told me, she goes, how did you react when you got that? And then I told her, and she goes, when people react that way, they have a much better chance of beating it, you know, because they'll fight. When people just go, oh, I've got cancer, oh, God, and they, you know, flip over belly up, you know, it's better if you fight. You got to have the attitude for it, you know, and that was just my first reaction was, screw this, I'm not doing it, you know.
So you're sending that information into every cell of your body and into the cancer. Of course.
I did, you know, and there's a lot that went into that. When I got diagnosed, my friend Kay from Sarvey, she gave me this book called Getting Well Again that was written in the 70s. And it's basically, the part in it I used, it's kind of the power of positive thinking is what it is. And it gives you these whole exercises. And it's a relaxation technique. It can be like yoga or whatever, what it would tell me to do is, okay, you sit down and it's 3 times a day. And you relax your body. You start from head all the way to your feet and relax each part as you go along. And then you visualize, and they use, I think, sharks as an example. Sharks swimming through your body, eating the cancer. And then you visualize all of it being gone, and then you visualize where you want to be at the end of this journey. And so I go, oh, I don't believe in any of this malarkey, and I didn't bother with it, you know. So I went through, like, the first 3 rounds of chemo. And, you know, you lose the hair, you get sick. You know, I wasn't that great of a patient because the first time I got the infusion, I felt pretty good going home. So I don't need the anti-nausea medicine. So, you know, the next morning about 6 a.m., I wound up in the emergency room, you know, giving me IVs and all this stuff. So I remember to take my anti-nausea meds after all that. And then they told me, they go, well, you know, you can't go to the Wildlife Center while you're going through this because your immune system is so compromised. And I go, well, that's not an option. I'm going. And they go, oh, well, okay, if you go, then you have to wear a mask. And I go, well, I'm not doing that either. Because this is life. If I can't go there, there's no point in doing this, you know. And so they're kind of rolling their eyes, going, oh, all right, you know. It's more the nurses. The doctor really understood, you know. So, and one time I was up there, this was probably 4 or 5 infusions in, and we had these little raccoons. you know, probably about 6-7 inches long. They'd gotten out, and I reached behind a cage to grab one. And this was about 7 or 8 days after an infusion, something like that. And one of them bit me pretty good on the finger.
Yikes.
So, yeah, put him back in there, you know. And I had a doctor's appointment the next day, and I had a Band-Aid on it, and I didn't even think about it. And they go, what happened there? And I can just remember, I go, my eyes just lit up, and I couldn't resist. I go, a raccoon bit me. Oh my God, like a raccoon. I'm going, it's okay, it was a small one. That still didn't assuage them all that much, you know, but yeah, it was kind of fun. So after
I wouldn't call it.
They were like rolling their eyes, and what are we going to do with you? You know, and right. It was a little one, it's all right. You know, the chemo didn't poison him, he's cool. You know, they're like, gosh. It's the other way. So I never got any infections or stuff like that. And after the third round, my main tumor in my spleen, which started out like at 9 centimeters, shrunk to 3. And a lot of them were gone. But then after another test, after 2 more rounds, nothing really had changed, you know. And me, I was like, okay, it's all going to be gone after the second round of tests. It'll all be gone. And so then here I was, pissed off again, walking across, you know, Linda, and she's going, don't give up. And I'm going, I'm not giving up, but it was supposed to have been gone by now, and it's not. So that's when I went back to this book. I go, well, you know, I've got all this stuff here. I might as well try it, because I know this kind of stuff actually can work. But I needed to use every weapon I had at that point, because I only had, I think, 4 more infusions left. And after I go through that, then it's a stem cell transplant. I really didn't want to go there. So I started doing the 3 times a day visualizations and all that stuff, and the shark. And then what was happening every night, I was, freedom was in my dreams, you know. She's flying around with me, she's there, all my dreams are with her. And it took a little while, and I realized, she's the one who's coming through my body, it's not the shark. So
exactly.
I substituted the shark, I put her in there in all my visualizations at that point. And then she was with me when I was sleeping, when I was doing these all day long. And I would take her out for a lot of long walks, because I wasn't doing much work. I was, you know, pretty tired of not being able to do that. So I would take her up to the hill. And when I was with her, when I had her on the glove and we're just out by ourselves, that would take me out of my situation. You know, I was in the moment with her. So there was no cancer. There was no anything. It was just me and her standing on this hill looking over the valley, enjoying it, you know. And so that was my real escape from that. And I come back, and then, I mean, there were nights when I would have these dreams that I didn't have cancer. And I'd wake up, and I go, wow, that's God, I thought I had cancer for a minute, you know, because the dreams were so real. And then you look in the mirror, and you don't have any hair, and you're all like chemo baby, you know. And it's like, oh, man, it's, you know, all comes kind of rushing back to you. So those were kind of difficult, but you know, as it went on, she just came to me in my dreams constantly, and we worked on all this stuff, and then I went back for the last test. You get 8 rounds, and this was in 2000. You got 8 rounds of what's called CHOP therapy, and it's an acronym for 4 different drugs, and they still use those 4. And so I went in there, had the last one. 3 weeks later, we went in for the blood test, which was the day after Thanksgiving in 2000. So I had to wait till Monday to find out the results. And so we went back Monday and got the results. The cancer was gone. You're free and clear. We'll see you in 3 months. So it was a pretty good morning. So we came home, and Linda was pretty exhausted, and I needed to go see the birds. So it was one of those, you know, late November, cold, rainy days here in the Northwest. And I drove up there, and there really wasn't anybody there other than the volunteers. And I went and got her from her flight, and we walked out to the side of the hill. And I never said anything to her. I didn't say the cancer's gone or anything. I just took her out. And we're standing there in this mist, light rain, overlooking everything, this whole valley. And then many times she'll put her left wing, the damaged one that only opens part way, she'll put it over my shoulder. She does that on a, you know, not a regular basis, but it's not uncommon. And then before I knew it, I could feel her right wing, and it was wrapped all the way around me, and I could feel her primary feathers, like those fingers on the feathers, pressing in my back. And I realized I was completely engulfed in eagle wings. I was getting a big eagle hug. I mean, it was wrapped all the way around. And she just kind of leaned in, and it was like nose to beak. And I realized what was going on.
Those pictures, I'm sure that the one that I'm talking about had to be in a moment like that, because it is so poignant. Yes. Her eyes are just amazing.
It was. There are a few moments like that. And we were just nose to beak, wrapped up in this engulfing in this big hug, and I don't know if it lasted 10 seconds or 10 minutes, because it was just kind of time stopped, and I was just literally there in the moment. And then the next thing I knew, it was over. And that's the only time she's ever done that.
Wow.
The day I was given the all clear from cancer, you know, and every once in a while she'll do the head on the chest thing, and she'll do these little baby chirps that she's done ever since she was just real, literally a baby. And she has a big vocabulary, and she shares a lot of stuff with me. She's two different people when she's like at the Wildlife Center, she's out on programs, and then when we're alone. She's an amazing soul who will, I've asked her to do a lot of things, and she's never failed to do any of them for me, you know. And I keep that respect in mind every time I ask her to do something. And one of my goals in my job in dealing with her is I get a lot of requests to take her everywhere. I've had requests to bring her to Europe. I mean, all over the place. And it's like, that's not even possible. But I make sure I keep her here. I don't ever want to stress her with travel. You know, there's just a couple of days that she can go out all at the same time. I won't take her across the country. She's not an object. You know, she's a living being with a lot to offer, so I don't ever let her be objectified or used as a prop, any of that kind
but
of stuff.
But you do bring her, I read somewhere that you do also work with the native people. Can you enlighten us to how, what kind of work you and Freedom do?
Well, you know, last weekend we did a powwow, and we've been asked to come and do a couple of powwows, and when I say that, that means grand entry, which is where they get all the dancers together, and it's before it starts, and the eagle will lead the dancers around the circle, and then you lead everybody back in, and you stop in front of the drums as they're singing their opening songs, and then the prayer ceremony is there, and, you know, they give thanks to grandfather or whatever, God, whatever you want to call it, and everybody is welcome to the powwow. There's no denomination or religion, really. It's everybody's welcome. It doesn't matter who you are. We want you all here. And I mean, it's a great honor to be asked for these. And it's also an honor for the tribes that we do this for to have an eagle there. I mean, because, you know, those are medicine birds to the native people. They also deliver their prayers to grandfather or the Great Spirit. That's when they fly out of sight, they deliver prayers. So eagle medicine is very, very strong medicine. And it's I had the tribal chairman came up to me last Saturday, I mean, with just tears in his eyes, and this is the second time we've done their powwow, and he just thanked me profusely for bringing her, and that you don't know how much you do for us when you bring her to our powwow. It's such an honor, you know, and to be thanked like that by these, and they're my friends, too, you know, so it's quite special.
It's very special. It's and also for her, in her... considering what she's been through, to be honored in that way and participate in such noble, let's say, ancestral experience of energy. So I'm sure that she's empowered by it as well.
Very much so. It's a great word, ancestral energy, because there is a definite connection. I mean, the drums talk to them, you know, and she just comes alive in some of these spots where I could just hold her up like as we're leaving her coming in, you know, and she will just react to the moment and be there. And I wrote about one particular powwow in my book the year when Kay died, and it had only been about a month. And this was the Stiligwamish Festival of the River we have up here every year. And I've been doing that with Freedom since she was a year old. We've been doing grand entry with that, and she's kind of grown up there. And we were coming around, and it was one of those rainbows in the skies, wind blows, wind doesn't blow, clouds come in, clouds go away, and the leaves, and this is always mid-August, and the leaves are flip-flopping their colors, light green, dark green, back and forth, and we're coming into the powwow circle, and the sky gets real dark, and the wind starts picking up, and the leaves are just whipping through the trees, and I can feel her just expanding on my arm. And, you know, and these birds are also known as spirit birds and sometimes thunderbirds and many different names. And I could just feel this transformation taking place on my arm. And, I mean, there's probably a couple of thousand people there. And the drums are going and the song is going. And it's really, it's a real, like on a rope to a tribal connection, to an ancestral connection. I mean, it was definitely plugged in at that particular moment. And I just look out of the corner of my eye, and she just looks incredibly huge to me, and she's like getting bigger.
Oh.
And this was going on and on, and I was just frozen in the moment because the drums and the singing was getting to a crescendo, and the wind was whipping through there, and she's just giant on my arm at this point. And then it all stops. It all goes away, and then I look, and she's back to the normal size, and I'm thinking to myself, am I hallucinating? What just happened here? And we get done with the whole grand entry, and we walk her back, and I'm talking to a friend of mine who's a Native American, and I looked over at her, and her eyes were the size of saucers. I mean, they were huge. I go, did you see that? And she almost couldn't speak. And then this other friend of mine, who was a great friend of Kay's for many years, Sharon Leatherdress, she came up, and I'm going, what was that? And she was going, that was Kay saying goodbye. They all knew what had happened because they all saw it. And I was just completely just thunderstruck and so honored to be included in that moment. I mean, that was really just a life-altering little event there. I mean, I'll never forget that.
That is extraordinary, like so many other experiences I'm sure you've had. And to think that, of course, this is, you know, what more lofty way for a soul to depart than on the wing of an eagle?
It was magical. It was so perfect. Yeah, it was. I mean, we had been presented with blankets, and, you know, everybody knew it was a month after our founder had died. And, I mean, there was still a lot of pain out there, you know. And it was perfect. And that has never happened since either. It's never happened before or since. And I've been there with her for every one of those.
Extraordinary. What is the lifespan of an eagle?
You know, 30 or 40 years is pretty old. It, you know, in the wild, it's quite a bit younger. You know, a 20 or 25-year-old bird is pretty old then. But, you know, I've been told that they've been known to live into their 70s, which is, you know, the extreme
end of
things.
So you'll be together for many years to come. A healed
Gidry
and a healed eagle named Freedom.
Yes, we will be together. She's a really special soul, you know, and we continue to grow even to this day. It's really a lot of fun playing around with her, you know.
So how much time do you actually spend with her, Jeff?
You know, on different weeks it varies, sometimes just a few hours. I mean, we were together all this weekend. You know, from spring through summer, it gets quite a bit. December, we usually take off. So, I'm with her at least a few hours every week, and she's up there. She doesn't need to be, it's not like a dog or a cat that needs, you know, more, and they like to be around you like that. It's just with her, it's just when we go, and she knows how to tell time, and she knows when we're going to go places, and she knows the sound. If I get the glove and the stuff I use to get her, you know, the jesses and leashes out of the, she has a carrier I keep in the back of my truck, and she knows the difference of sounds between me getting them out to stay there or me getting them out to go somewhere with her. You know, she loves to travel. She's a great traveler.
You have a number of birds of prey in the center. Is that correct?
Yes, we do. We probably have, in our education program, we've probably got close to maybe 20.
These are all animals that can no longer fly?
Some can fly but can't be released. We have a barn owl that will not hunt, and she flies great. And we've tried to hunt her. We've tried to wild her up for months at a time, and she just won't do it. The golden eagle we have, Huayaki, which loosely translated means feather leg. That bird got a disease called trichomoniasis, and it'll kill them. She was found down on the ground in eastern Washington and was taken to a place that has been since been put out of business, a rehabber, because they were feeding her wrong food and it rotted some of her. She didn't get any calcium, so she broke a leg, and her jaw is deformed now. So a bird's beak is like a person's fingernail that continuously grows. So her jaw is now, it's like a malocclusion or something in there. And so eventually one side would grow all the way over and the other side would grow all the way up, so she couldn't eat. She'd starve to death. Other than that, she can fly and hunt, and it's really a shame because she's a great, she's a very powerful bird, and it's, so she's part of our education team too.
So what does your education team do? Do you go to schools and work with children?
I've done a lot of that with Freedom early on. I don't do the schools much anymore, but we do have an education team, and they do a lot of schools. I do different events, and I do a lot of events at the Wildlife Center. It's basically, we try to teach them about, obviously, the birds themselves and about their habitat and about how you can help, you know, how humans are connected to this. And, the messages we all take, everybody takes, you live in a house, there's wood, you've taken that wood, you take food, but what are you going to get back, is the message. You take, but you need to get back. And we try to teach that early on to kids, and it's usually pretty well received. So it's quite a lot of fun doing that. My schedule doesn't allow me to do a lot of schools anymore, so I have to kind of pick and choose.
Are you still doing music? I know that you're a musician.
I haven't been playing for a long time. I had an offer to go play in Europe right as I got this book deal from HarperCollins, and it was kind of like, do I want to go play in Europe or don't? I think I'll write a book. I haven't done that, so. I went with the book, and I'm glad I did.
But it's a bestseller, isn't it?
I'm sorry?
It's the bestseller, isn't it?
Yes, it was. It didn't hit the New York Times bestseller list, but it hit a few others, so it's doing okay. The paperback's been out for about a year now, so it did well enough to get the hard copy and the paperback out. And I had my my publicist going, well, what would it take to get her to New York for, like, the Today Show and stuff like that when it first came out? And I'm going, well, I had to call Delta, and to make a long story here short, I don't know how much time we have. It's a kind of a funny story. It's you have to get ramp privileges, and they only give them to U.S. military bringing remains back. So I go, well, listen, I have this bird. I'm thinking about taking her. How much? And the guy at Delta, he goes, well, they don't, but I'll check. So he calls me back a couple of days later. He goes, well, I got you ramp privileges, which means I can have somebody take her to the freight and sit with her at freight. Load her onto the truck, ride with her onto the tarmac, and supervise her loading on the plane, because I'll be sitting on the plane. And they can do that. I go, well, that's great. I got ramp privileges in Seattle, but now I need them in New York. He goes, oh, they don't do that since 9/11. But I'll make a call. A couple days later, he goes, you're not going to believe it, but I got you ramp privileges at JFK. I go, great, okay. So I call my publisher, and I go, okay, here's what it is. I'd rather not do this. I'd rather do it here. But I can get her there. But here's the deal. I need a big SUV. I need a vet tech. I need three handlers and a hotel that takes eagles in New York. I go, why don't we just do it there? I'm going, yeah, let's rather do it here.
The hotel that takes eagles had to be the clincher.
Yeah. I don't know how many there are in New York, but I could just imagine her running around a hotel room in New York.
Right.
Before
we go ahead, I just want to emphasize that the name of this book is An Eagle Named Freedom, and it's published by HarperCollins. And what is your website? Because we're kind of past the halfway mark, and I want people who just might have come in late to be able to pick up where we started from. So what website should you refer people to, Jeff?
There's the Sarvey Wildlife Care Center. That's Sarvey, Sarvey, wildlife.org. That's for Freedom. That's where we're all out of, I don't have a personal one. I do have HarperCollins. If you go on there under authors, you can look under my name because they have a website for me on there that's just totally mine. So you can go in there, and that'll tell you. There's video of me and her on there.
Okay.
It'll tell you a little bit about the book. And the Sarvey one is just a brand new site. It's still under construction, and they're actually on me now because I'm president of the board of directors, so they're going, we got to get your bio on here. I need it now. And I'm like, oh, God, I hate doing that. So I'm in the middle of writing that today.
So what do you do to fill your day up there in the wilds of Washington when you're not
well? I have a sled dog here named Jack. His name is Jack Daniels. He's from the Spirits Litter from my friend Christine up in Anchorage. And she drew the number one slot on next year's Iditarod, so I'll be up for that, which I'm very much into sled dogs and running them up there. I got to do that quite a bit this year. I got to go to the Yukon Quest and take some sleds out with my friend up in Two Rivers up north of Fairbanks. That was back in like early February. And I mean, those dogs are absolutely amazing. They're so much fun, and there's nothing on earth like them. They can cover more ground in the shortest amount of time than any animal on this planet. It's an amazing creature. So Jack and I hit it off. Pardon?
I've heard that they really do love running. They need to run. It's not like they're suffering by being utilized in that way.
No, they need to run. They're born to run, you know. And, you know, what brought me to this was you talked about the ancestral connection. And, you know, and they have it. There's part of the Yukon River these guys run down, you know. And that's like an ancient highway to these dogs. It's all the way back in their DNA when they first came over the Bering Land Bridge, you know, 15,000 years ago.
Wow.
But I go to Alaska quite a bit, you know. They ask you, can you bring the bird up here? Like, oh, it's really a pain in the butt to take an eagle across state lines. You got to get permission from states and all this stuff. So they come down. My friends come down and visit her and stuff. But I'm a buyer for a music company, and, you know, and with the Wildlife Center, that's quite a bit of time. There's something to deal with that every day. We've got a great group up there from our executive director all the way down through our volunteers and staff and stuff. And so us and Paws are the two largest in the state. We're only one of two wildlife rehab centers in the country that have a wildlife ambulance that will actually go out and get injured animals.
That's fantastic.
We have vet drop-off points. You know, people call up, they go, oh, I got a, you know, songbird that fell out of the nest, or baby squirrels. They can take them and drop them off, and our ambulance will make a, you know, round of these clinics a day. But, you know, if you got like a downed eagle or, you know, a bear that's whatever, like we just got a bear call last weekend, and we'll go out and get it, you know, if it needs to be got. You know, sometimes it just needs to be left alone. But, so, yeah, we do everything. The only thing we haven't done up here is wolf and grizzly bear, which, you know, we don't have enough room to do a grizzly, but we do black bears, and we've had elk in here and deer. And
I was going to ask you, how big is this center? It sounds like you've got quite a system going on here.
You know, it's a compact area. It's on 5 acres, but it's not 5 usable acres because there's wetlands on part of it, and we're moving our education birds, which are in a separate building, which are donated. The building was donated years ago by a VP from Microsoft, so they gave us the money to build that. And it's outlived its usefulness. So we have these new ones being built, and they're going into the wetlands, but we're getting a dispensation because we're not doing anything to it. It's all elevated. So eventually they're going to go down there in these nice little yurts, and we're in the process, once that's done, to tear down the old building because we need a new hospital, because these buildings were built years ago, and one was added onto the other. You know, you do what you can do at the time, and then you get more, and then you add on more, and it's grown and expanded to where now, I mean, you know, we'll do 4,000 animals coming through our doors in a year.
You know, whoa. I wanted to get into the ecology and things like that, but we won't have all that time. But what is the major reason that animals are coming in? Are, like in the case of the eagles, obviously they're, like you said, she didn't make it when she tried to fly out of the nest. Uh-huh. But is there, do you see a trend, or is there something that regards the ecology that is affecting so many animals coming in?
You know, I mean, it's sad to say the trend is really human interference, whether it's driving a car, building a road, cutting down a tree. We're just getting squished closer and closer together to these animals, and the interaction, I mean, even in the process of being brought there, it's human interference. So a lot of this stuff is the vast majority is directly attributed to human, whether it's direct or indirect, you know, and a lot of people care and work on this, but I mean, you still get poisonings, which, you know, somebody wants to kill something and they do, and then it kills whatever ate it or poisons whatever ate it. A lot of hit by cars. You still get, I haven't seen as many gunshot birds come through as I have in the past, but we get eagles gunshot, you know, and there are hunters that work with us as I, you know, they'll come up, and if we get roadkill deer, we've had a lot of deer this year. I mean, a huge amount of deer, almost all of it was roadkill, and it's all pretty fresh stuff and we get it. So a legitimate hunter that goes out and hunts for food, I mean, they're just absolutely appalled at some, you know, drunken fool would shoot an eagle, and it's usually what it is. It's not anybody out there, well, I'm putting dinner on the table. And a lot of people, we have a lot of vegetarians up there, vegans and meat eaters. You get, it's a real eclectic group of people, but everybody understands these animals, the raptors, the carnivores, they have to have meat. That's the only way they can live. So it's an accepted fact. How we choose to feed ourselves, that's our personal choice. These guys don't have that.
And they How do you manage to get all this food for all these birds?
Some of our, like the Stille Guamish, some of our native tribes up there, especially the Stilles, they'll bring us in salmon. They'll bring us in deer. They brought us buffalo. Bring us elk. So when they go out and hunting, they'll get an extra one or something like that. Some of the stuff we buy, we have like stores and people that go out to different stores to get produce that they're going to throw away that's still totally good. We'll bring that in there. We have a wish list on our website of stuff that we need, whether it's cleaning stuff, paper towels, any kind of, you know, during the baby season, like Esbelac and different kinds of formula people can buy. You know, we're funded totally on donations from the public.
Okay, so that's where I was headed. I was headed there. What is the site? Because I'm sure that a lot of people that are listening are more than happy to send what they can to, especially because you're not asking only for money, but for goods. So please tell me where people can, is it Sarvey Wildlife Center where they can go to donate?
Yes, it's, sarveywildlife.org, or you can just Google Sarvey Wildlife Center, or you can Google me and Freedom, Jeff and Freedom, or you can Google my book. All of that will take you there. The site is good. You can donate right on the front page. We have monthly donors. You can send whatever you like. There's no amount is too small. You know, that's how we stay afloat, is from our monthly donors. I mean, we'll get grants here and there for a certain project or something like that, but that's not operating funds, and that's, you know, what we need. So it's,
but you're still okay because you're expanding, right?
I'm sorry?
It sounds like you're doing okay because you're able to expand, so enough people are plugged into the good work you're doing.
You know, we're expanding, and I guess the other part of the expansion is also it expands the expenses, too. So, yeah, I mean, we're expanding. We've building new stuff, repairing old stuff, and moving that along. But at the same token, our expenses go up. So it doesn't seem like we're really making any money. We're still where we were, but we're just getting bigger.
That's
so
wonderful.
Yeah, it's very much needed, even though baby season has stopped. We're getting into the part of the year where raptors are going to start coming in. Raptors that have left the nest, a lot of fledglings are going to, you know, they're going to have trouble now and through the winter, so we're going to get those in. And so it's a never ending round robin coming through our doors, but it's an amazing place. I mean, you can see just incredible miracles come through there, and just the most amazing spirits come through there. And sometimes some of the most soul crushing stories will come through there too. But you get through that, and the next one around the corner will just, you know, take your breath away. It's an amazing place to be. I've been there.
I would love to be closer. I'd tell you that.
Well, you should come visit us.
Oh, I will. It's been a long time that I haven't been in the States, but I would certainly just flourish in the delight in being able to spend some time there. I will definitely put that on my list. Thank you for the invitation.
If you ever get up this way, you have an invitation from me, and I'll give you a personal tour.
Oh, what more? And I'll be able to see Eagle and you together, Eagle, Freedom and you together, which would be something very powerful for me, I assure you. I get tears in my eyes as soon as I think of that picture of her nestling her beak in your neck. Well, it's her head in your neck.
She's done that a couple of times through the camera, but usually when she does it, nobody's around. So it's really a fluke that the picture is even taken.
It is just so moving. What does she eat? I was just curious. I know that this is a trivia question, but we got off that question earlier. What does she eat in a day? What does it take to feed an eagle in a day?
You know, she's a real picky eater. So, you know, they'll usually eat somewhere a little bit less than a pound a day, and she usually eats a lot less than that. She's one of the most finicky eaters you've ever seen. She likes venison. And, you know, I'll preface this by saying she never gets fed live. They don't need to be fed live because they're live eaters.
Okay.
The only time we feed live prey to an animal there is if we have, like, owls and hawks that we've raised from juveniles there and that we're going to release and that have never hunted before. We have to know that they can hunt before they get released.
Right.
That's the only time that we hunt.
I didn't know that excuse my ignorance, I didn't know that eagles would eat meat that was not live killed.
Oh yeah. They're very opportunistic. They don't need to have live at all. They don't ever need to have it. If they can steal it from somebody, they'll take it every time. She loves it.
Well, you better watch out when you're carving into your dinner then.
yeah, you better. She loves venison, and she loves small bunnies that come in the springtime, you know, that somebody's cat or dog will kill or whatever. If there's no medicine in them, they go to the eagles. And, oh, man, her eyes get huge. She can be full. Eagles have all these raptors have crops, you know, like hawks and eagles. And it's like a little refrigerator in their neck because their stomachs aren't that big. So when their stomachs get full, they can shove all this meat and stuff into their crop and it'll hold it. And it'll dissolve meat off bones and feathers, and they'll cough up what they can't digest. So her crop can be huge, like the size of a baseball. And if you wave one of these little bunnies in front of her face, she'll just go nuts.
Ouch.
She'll eat it.
That hurts. Listen, we are almost out of time, believe it or not. And I, it's just so moving to have you. Thank you for sharing your story with us. I'd like, before we sign out, if you have any message that you want to bring through from you or from Freedom or from the other beings that are safe in the sanctity of Sarvey Wildlife Center, to share with people who are tuned in.
You know, I just ask for respect for all living things, you know, and to let them have their space. And for everybody to give back in whichever way they can, whether it's volunteering at a rehab center, volunteering to help a child, however you can give back in some small way. But, I mean, just keep in mind these are intelligent, soulful beings that are sharing this planet with us. And to give them anything less than that kind of credit is really a crime.
Touché. Thank you, Jeff Guidry. We've been talking with Jeff Guidry. He is the author of An Eagle Named Freedom, and you know, I just, for the pictures alone, you've got to get this book, and for the heartwarming story of this connection, it's a real jewel to have in your collection. Thanks again, Jeff. I thank you for the invitation.
Thank you very much.
I do my best to come, and don't forget, if a feather happens to fall, I would be forever honored.
Righto, I won't forget.
Alrighty. All right, thank you, everybody.
You.
Thank you. Sorry? Thank you, Jeff.
Thank you. All right.
Thank you. Thank you. All righty. I've got a few minutes left. I just want to remind everyone of the words of this man, Jeff Guidry. Remember to give back. We are a species that takes a lot from this planet, and sometimes we find it hard to reach into our pockets and or into our gardens or forests and give back. So never forget that we are one energy, one being, one life form, and the earth is calling out to the human race to rebalance Gaia and help her rebirth into what we know is going to be a galactic happening of unfathomable proportions. We've heard from someone who is a caretaker for the animals and obviously for the nature that nourishes them. And I hope that you've been as touched as I am. Be sure to look at his site and just this, imagine just for a moment before I sign out, what it would be like to have been told in the morning that you've beaten the cancer. And then when you go to see your eagle, Freedom, to have her wings around you. If that isn't a ultimately extraordinary spiritual epiphany, I don't know what is. And her name is Freedom to boot. So everyone, I hope this has touched you as it has me. I feel very emotional when I think about that. And I love emotion, so I love being stirred about the greatness of man and the animals that we share this planet with. This is Patricia Corey. Thank you for tuning in. I have tears, and I can't hide that. I love, love, love the story of Jeff Guidry and Freedom. I will be with you in 2 weeks. I'll be calling. I'll be talking to you from Peru because my Peru journey begins soon. And somewhere, some mountain peak from the Andes, where my crazy life continues, I will find a way to connect and bring you some Andean wisdom for my next show. I'm not sure yet who that will be, but I assure you it will be interesting. So don't forget to tune in 2 weeks from now. And by the way, next week I will be a guest on Blog Radio with Curtis Davis of the Occult Radio, the Occult Network, excuse me. And he has asked me to do a 2-hour show on the Syrian Starseed Tarot and to give an introductory lesson, let's say, into working with these cards. So get your deck so that next Saturday you can tune in and have a first preamble to what will be an entire probably DVD that I'll put out on the intricacies of that deck. Okay, it's really doing well. Thank you all for your interest and your enthusiasm about this latest gift from the Syrian High Council, which is totally designed to open that third eye and activate the pineal gland, and divination is secondary to that process. All right, everyone, thank you. You have been listening to Beyond the Matrix, soaring with the eagle in every sense. I thank you, I love you, and I will talk to you soon from the Andean peaks, maybe from Lake Titicaca. Many blessings. Ciao, ciao. Nanu, nanu. Patricia signing out.